She's best described as a bit of a character. I think that's like quite a, it's a very English way of putting it.
Hello and welcome to the Super Bayern Podcast. Bayern Munich continued their spectacular form last week with a pair of wins over title rivals Borussia Dortmund and struggling Fortuna Dusseldorf. Though Dortmund made the Bavarians work for their result, Bayern's thrashing over Dusseldorf was one of the most dominant displays the Bundesliga has seen in some time. I'm Benjamin Scott, and I'm here to talk about those games, along with some other team news, with my friends Tim Richards.
Hello there.
And Sebastian Zimmermann.
Hi.
Well, let's start by looking at those games. Of course, the all-important Bayern versus Borussia Dortmund ended 1-0 in Bayern's favor, thanks to a great chipped goal from Joshua Kimmich. Obviously, Roman Bürki could have done a little bit more. But Tim, in that game against Dortmund, how did Bayern look to you? Was the result fair? Do you think it maybe could have been a draw? Were they still shaking off rust? Or are you kind of confident that, yeah, this is Bayern's title to lose going forward now?
Yeah, very much the latter. I think this was a really strong performance. I think obviously if there's like any dust that still needs to be shaken off, Dortmund are in the exact same position as well. I think this was probably Bayern's first real challenge coming back. You know, in terms of difficult games to play, we've already played Leipzig. The next couple of games against Leverkusen and Gladbach are probably going to be the biggest challenges after Dortmund. But the fact that Bayern were able to win, I kind of like the fact that they were only able to win by one goal. It means that they did enough, but it was clearly, they clearly had to work for it. And the fact that it wasn't, you know, if it was 5-4, I think that's kind of difficult to really work out. Like, you know, are Bayern really good going forward? Are they really bad in defence? Like, it's kind of hard to work out from that. I think the fact that they were able to keep a clean sheet is really impressive, especially considering how prolific Dortmund are in front of goal. I think everybody did really, really well. And you can kind of see that even without the fans, this was like a really important victory for Bayern. And I think, as you said, it is definitely theirs to lose now.
Yeah, and last time we talked, Sebastian, we brought up several kind of players that we wanted to watch or key battles that would kind of define the match. Specifically looking at how Bayern defended, Tim brought that up. What did you think? Were you impressed? Did anyone stand out to you in the game against Dortmund, Sebastian?
Yeah, I think there were a couple of interesting things there. For one, I think this was one game in which Joshua Kimmich finally again had much of the spotlight. He was probably the best player on the field in that one. And also two people who, well, hadn't looked too great for a relatively long time over the course of the season, being Kingsley Coman, who I think looked pretty good, and Jerome Boateng again looking good. I mean, he's still a player about which we're talking if he's staying any longer, or maybe his time is up now. But right now he's really showing that he's probably still capable of going on as a Bayern player and being very good as a center back, which is definitely going to make things interesting because center back is definitely one of the positions that are most up in the air kind of for the next transfer period. So this is shaping up to be very interesting, I think. And I guess the last player I want to mention here is Thomas Müller, because people seem to pretty much disagree if this was a good game by Thomas Müller or if it was a bad game. I have seen outlets having him as like the second or third best player for Bayern in this game, while for others he's kind of the worst player for this Bayern team, which is interesting. I'm kind of two minds myself a bit here, but I guess I wouldn't go to any of those extremes. I don't think it was necessarily his best game this season, not even close. But I would also never have come up with the idea that he might have been the worst player on the field, basically. So, yeah, I found that quite interesting, I must say.
Yeah, I mean, if I could add to that, I think you're right. And it was very average from Thomas Müller. And I think that part of what plays into that is that Robert Lewandowski had a very, by his standards, a very bad game. Serge Gnabry didn't provide nearly the threat that you would have expected out of him. Kingsley Coman is obviously just not a goal-scoring threat, so he was kind of, Thomas Muller was kind of stranded in attack, and there's not much, you know, if the guys around him aren't producing, then it's going to be hard for him to do the same thing. And I think it says a lot that our goal came from, you know, just this moment of brilliance from Joshua Kimmich with that chip shot. And while we're on him, I think that he definitely did take the spotlight. I would agree that Jerome Boateng was also one of the best players in the match, but I think Kimmich is just showing again that he's just got that big game mentality. In the past, he scored important goals in the Champions League, and now he scores the winner against Dortmund. Offensively, with his passing, I think he was a bit off against Borussia Dortmund, but he covered more ground in that game than any Bayern player has since they started keeping track of that data. And so I think that says a lot about just his mentality heading into the big games against, you know, Borussia Dortmund in the Champions League, whatever it may be. I just want to, you know, highlight that because I think he's one of those players kind of like Thomas Muller that we take for granted to have on the team. He's just, he shows up, he does great, and we're just like, yeah, I mean, that's Joshua Kimmich, that's what he does. And I think we need to bring it up that we are really fortunate to have a player like him who can be the world's best right back, then come into defensive midfield and still be the best player on the pitch as well. And so that was really great to see. And then on top of that, I mean, Alphonso Davies just showing again that he's got what it takes. He's not just, you know, this small game player. He's not just going to do it against the Bundesliga's smaller squads, but he's going to do it in the big games. He's going to step up as he did again against Borussia Dortmund. So just two guys that it's just exciting to have on the team heading into the future. For the sake of time, we'll go ahead and move on to the second game that happened in this past week, and that was Bayern Munich beating Fortuna Dusseldorf 5-0. All around excellent team game. Tim, probably the best Bayern performance that we've seen, I don't know, maybe since Hansi Flick took over with a few games thrown in, but the question that a lot of people are throwing out, you know, was Bayern that good against Dusseldorf, or are Dusseldorf just that bad? So what would your response to that be?
Yeah, very difficult to work out. I think that's just the whole theme of football at the moment. Like, you have such a long period off, and then, you know, I think Bayern mentally are always going to be superior to a team like Fortuna Dusseldorf. No disrespect intended. Obviously, fully delivered, I'm sure. I think it is a fantastic testament to their ability to show up and just keep on going. I know I mentioned, I think in the last episode, there was a game against Hamburg in 2013 where Bayern scored 9 goals, conceded 2, which, like, okay, great, that's fine, like, you win by 7 goals, but the fact that they conceded kind of shows they, you know, they took their foot off the pedal maybe a little bit. Keeping a clean sheet at the moment is hugely impressive, I think. I think in terms of defensive stability, Bayern have looked quite shaky at times, not just this season or like this this period after the pause, but just generally in the past 10 years or so. So I think if Bayern can show up and just keep on scoring and keep on pressing and always working for more, I think any opportunity to kind of lean back and think, okay, we've kind of done enough here, like, let's, you know, I think I've mentioned it a few times, this concept of declaring in cricket, where you just, we've done enough, okay, you can have a go now. I think there is like this relentless and quite ruthless approach, which I think is fantastic to see. Yeah, it's something that I'm really happy about. I was excited watching it. Everybody performed to the best of their abilities. I'd even wager to say that Benjamin Pavard did quite well, which is immensely high praise coming from me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're spot on. Like you said, everyone had a good game. There was a few guys that maybe rose a little bit above the others, specifically Pavard, because he also was rising above everyone else in that game to win his headers. But it was just all around, like, I don't think, comparing it to the Dortmund game, there was no one that you would say, okay, this player didn't play very well. Like, everyone was on top of their game. Even Kingsley Coman was looking pretty good out there. So maybe that does say more about the talents of Fortuna Dusseldorf. But in this game, Hansi Flick actually used all 5 of his substitutions. And Sebastian, he put in a lot of the younger guys, a lot of the second team players, kind of up and coming. So did anyone, I guess, make the most of their chances really stand out to you, specifically looking at the younger players?
Yeah, I got to say, I was very happy to see that. Talking about the younger players, of course, I assume you're not really including Davies here, although he's definitely one right. of the younger guys still, because I want to also throw in a little word about him here. I found him impressive again. So for me, this was really a game where both fullbacks really shone, in my opinion, because Davies basically started the counterattack that led to our first goal in that one. And yeah, he was just really quite good. Also scored a goal, so very impressive. It's really rare that you have both fullbacks scoring and being as involved on offense. I have dealt with that now, I think Kissons really was very good in this one. You could tell that he was really quite motivated, and he really wanted to show that he's not just here to sit on the bench and, get more money than he could get in Gladbach, but that he's really serious about making it at this club. And I found that quite impressive. And I was also happy to see more of the other players, although like Sexy and Batista Maya, although I did not feel like they were as impressive. I guess that's just how that goes sometimes. So I wouldn't say that they were disappointing or anything, just... didn't find the time to put in highlights in their like 15 minutes or what they got. So yeah, and I guess I also want to add that we haven't talked about that yet. I believe that Goretzka played quite well, which is not entirely surprising, of course. But I think it's quite important that we now see that with Flick and with Kimmich, I guess being the two most important players concerning that, we have now managed to have a really quite functional double six, or whatever you want to call it. It's not quite a exact symmetrical double six, but it worked quite well, and we should not forget that. Like a couple of months ago, we were still worrying what we're going to do in defensive midfield, and then Thiago finally turned it around and became a very good solution right next to Kimmich. And now, it also works with Goretzka. And I think that's went kind of under the radar, I believe. But that's definitely very, very good news that we are making that work reliably now.
Yeah, we'll talk about Kissons in a second. But while we're on Leon Goretzka, he, in both of these games, he's kind of played a deeper role. I think against Dortmund, he... generally played a little bit further back than Joshua Kimmich even. And so he's sort of playing this, I kind of call it the Arturo Vidal box-to-box type role, but generally staying a little bit more on the cautious side. Tim, Sebastian was just talking about him, obviously, but do you think that this kind of deeper hybrid, I guess, between a 6 and an 8 is a better role for him than the more advanced role that we are used to seeing him play at Bayern?
Yeah, he kind of did something very similar to that. I think in his final season at Schalke, he was next to Max Meyer, Crystal Palace legend Max Meyer. I think he's the sort of guy that is kind of built to do just about anything. I don't know, maybe it's a bit harsh for me to say that like he's never going to be world class at one particular thing, but he'll be very good at most things. It's like he's very strong. He's outrageously strong. He's huge.
Especially now.
The guy's a tank at the moment. Just shows that it could be done, just not by me. So he's obviously very strong. He's very quick, very agile. Like he can pass, he can tackle, he can do just about everything. I think I've seen a lot of comparisons to Mikhail Ballack. My memory of Ballack was somebody that left for Chelsea, so it's kind of tainted. But I remember he was, fairly decent footballer, I suppose, to put it quite spitefully, I guess. I think he was probably one of Bayern's best midfielders in recent generations, but he did sign for Chelsea, so we just don't really talk about that. I think I can see, I can maybe see him take on that sort of Vidal role. I don't know about you, if this is just the way that I've kind of interpreted it, but whenever Vidal was playing in any game, he made himself very well known. Like, he was everywhere. He got involved in everything, for better or worse. Not always a positive thing. but he was always everywhere on the pitch. When Goretzka was playing against Dortmund, against Dusseldorf, there are times where I forgot that he was playing, much in the same way that you forget that a centre-back is involved. I think because he just did everything exactly the way that it was supposed to. There was nothing that really stood out. I think I can remember saying a good couple of years ago now that guys like Kimmich and Vidal, whenever they're having a bad game, they're still giving it everything. And like, you know, if they're dropping like a 4 out of 10, they're still going to be working really, really hard for the ball. I kind of don't really see that with Goretzka. I think he just is somebody that quietly gets on with it, which is, you know, it's very welcome, because it shows that there's like a very level-headed person in the middle of the pitch. He's obviously, Kimmich has got his reputation for shouting at anything. So it's kind of, maybe there is like the perfect balance where you have like the physicality and the agility, but also the mental side of things as well.
Yeah, and I think that's the key point you just brought up right there, is how well he works alongside Joshua Kimmich. And of course, we've said the same thing about Thiago as well, and Kimmich and Thiago look excellent together as well. So I think maybe what we should be saying here is that anyone's going to look good next to Joshua Kimmich. But I think that they pair together very nicely, because Kimmich is obviously more technically capable. His passing range is incredible, his vision's incredible. And while Goretzka's isn't bad by any means, he definitely brings more of that physicality, that speed in the middle, that hard work now, obviously, that strength. He's, like you said, he's a tank at the moment. But I think they do couple together very well. And I think that you also brought up, if there's any criticism that we can level against him, is that sometimes he does sort of disappear. And that is a little bit alleviated by the fact that Joshua Kimmich's presence is just so well known. Like, the ball's going to go to him. It's going to be distributed from him. And I think that's where Leon Goretzka has the edge over Thiago. When you have Thiago and Kimmich both playing alongside each other in midfield, that's two guys who want to have the ball, who want to be the main distributor. Goretzka is not so, he doesn't care so much if the ball comes through him every single time. Let the ball go to Kimmich. I'll do the sort of off the ball work and provide some more defensive cover, get into the box for the header, stuff like that. So yeah, I think it's a really good partnership, and when Thiago comes back, Hansi Flick is going to have a lot of questions, a lot of choices, difficult choices to make as to how he shapes up that midfield. But Sebastian, earlier you brought up Mikael Kiesance, and Tim, I do want to come to you, because I want to hear your thoughts on him for a minute, because I know that you're probably a little bit jaded that he's now getting the opportunities that your guy Renato Sanchez never got. So do you think Kiesance, is he on the same track maybe as Renato Sanchez, or do you think he does look promising, he might be able to work his way into this very crowded midfield?
I think it's too early. Obviously, we picked up Renato Sanchez at a point where he was, you know, one of the hottest properties in football. He was he burst into the Benfica team, became very important there, was just as important for the Portugal team that won the Euros. And it didn't work out for him because of, you know, management, injuries, attitude potentially, or even aptitude. I think some could argue there. I am a little bit disappointed that he was kind of like shipped out. I really like Renato Sanchez. I thought he clearly had the ability. To see Mikael Kiesance get into the team is great. Like, I think I was as surprised as anybody else to see that Hansi Flick made not one but five substitutions, fairly sensible substitutions as well, which was very unusual. And the fact that he was one of them was interesting, because, you know, I wasn't a huge fan of Rafinha for the longest time. And well, look at me now. Like, your opinions of people can change. Like, my opinion of Benjamin Pavard is changing slowly but surely. So there's every possibility that I will grow to love Kiesance as a Bayern player in the same way that I grew to absolutely and unapologetically adore Rafinha. I think the way that he played against Dusseldorf was to be expected. Like, he was clearly desperate to impress. Like, he was selfish, he was driven. I can't disparage that, because it's the exact thing that Renato Sanchez was doing. And it's the same thing that any other young player would have done that wanted to prove that he was worth it. Because obviously he's going to try the outlandish. If he's capable of making it happen, great. Because that means that Bayern get more goals and we've got great players. I don't know if he's going to have like a set place in the team, or if it is just going to be a matter of, okay, while we can make five substitutions, you can be one of the additional two. I don't know what his position is, because as we've said, that's a very crowded midfield to become a part of. I don't know. I think it's too early for me to tell. And I think the Dusseldorf game wasn't, I don't want to say it wasn't a fair representation of his ability, but I think it he wouldn't be doing that sort of thing if it was in the Champions League semi-final, let's say. But yeah, I don't know. I'm willing to be proven wrong.
I mean, we've got a crowded schedule between now and the end of June, which is the end of the Bundesliga season. Sebastian, any chance you think that he starts a game or two, maybe even this weekend against Bayer Leverkusen, since the Eintracht Frankfurt DFB Pokal game is coming midweek after that?
Yeah, I would think there's definitely a possibility. I mean, if anybody gets hurt or even very slightly sick, or maybe is not training all that well or gets too tired, I guess that there should be opportunities. There's every chance for that. It might work out, it might not work out for him, but it's definitely a very real possibility with this tight schedule. So I can definitely see that happening. And I would actually be curious how that might turn out. Because, yeah, why not? He's definitely, as I said, I mean, we talked about he played a bit selfish. He definitely wanted to show, he wanted to do something great, probably, which is a good thing, but he was probably a bit too selfish about that. But for me, still, the bottom line was still a positive one with his game there. So he maybe earns it, I think, because the biggest fear really with Cuisance really was that he might not really have the heart for it. He just might be one of those guys who gets kind of satisfied with having a big paycheck and getting a couple of minutes here and there. So I guess that was the biggest fear with him, that he might be one of those guys. And I guess he's not, and that's definitely good news for me. So I'm really looking forward to see some more minutes from him in a game. Maybe start, or maybe get some other second halves like he did this time. That would also be interesting enough, I believe.
Yeah, I would say as long as Thiago's out, I would hope that he's the first guy to come in any game. I mean, he was able to play against Fortuna because Lucas Hernandez was removed at halftime after playing the first half alongside David Alaba. Sebastian, how did that... I know it's obviously kind of tough to judge when, you know, Bayern dominated a game like they did, but how did you think that Hernandez and Alaba center-back pairing worked out?
Really, really no complaints from my perspective there. I must say I was kind of surprised that he was taken off at halftime because... Yeah, I guess you want to give him some confidence. You want to build this guy up because he,
I think he was complaining of not necessarily an injury, but he kind of was feeling something weird in his leg or something like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if that really is the case, I guess then it's understandable. I think that looked really good. I mean, the thing everybody's always talking about is that Alaba and Hernandez are not exactly the tallest guys on the field, and that they are both left-footed. But yeah, I really think that sometimes gets blown out of proportion a little bit there. So I was really pretty happy with that. And yeah, I still think that Hernandez can be our guy at centre-back. And I also think that it's really not an issue at all if he's paired with David Alaba. Of course, they are both technically very gifted and they are both very quick. And that's definitely as much an asset as their size might be a problem in some situations.
Yeah, so what we're talking about, Lucas Hernandez, Tim, some reports came out earlier this week saying that Bayern are considering selling him this summer, or almost even plan on selling him this summer. Now, I obviously do not believe those, but let's just assume there may be some sort of truth in that. Should Bayern even, you know, be considering selling someone they bought just 1 year ago for 80 million euros who has hardly even played for the club? And then, you know, if they did, how would that look for Bayern?
No, well, I don't believe it either. I think this is, it's easy to write that. It's easy to write it without really considering the sort of club that Bayern are, doesn't matter. They're not the sort of team to bring somebody in and then say, nah, we don't really care anymore. Like, the worst that would happen would that he'd go out on loan. Problem is that he's a World Cup winning left back. He's come from a team that is, I guess, like, notoriously good at defending. He was like one of the key players in just an outrageously gifted back line. There is no way that Bayern would even contemplate for a second, hey, should we just get rid of him? Because, like, we've got Davies. He's pretty good at left back. Alaba can fill in. Like, it doesn't make any sense at all, because he is too good. Yeah, you can't really account for injuries. Like, if that was the case, then guys like Tolisso wouldn't be here this year. Probably won't be there next year. But he had a good season and then was injured for an entire year. Much like Javi Martinez, like, he would have been sold a long time ago as well, because he missed an entire season there. I think Hernandez, okay, he played 45 minutes, then went off with a slight injury. Boateng's gone off with a slight injury every single game this season. He's still very reliable. That's hyperbole. I think it's just like once or twice, but he's still somebody that you can rely on. I guess like the biggest, you know, quote, problem that Hernandez has is that he is competing with, you know, this 19-year-old wonder kid who is by virtue competing with David Alaba. But they were only given the opportunity to play in those positions because Hernandez has been injured. I don't think that it's anything to really be concerned about. I think even, I know I've kind of brought this up a number of times with other players, the sheer amount that he is supporting the club himself. Mm-hmm. Like, he clearly loves being here, because you don't leave a team like Atletico to go somewhere like Bayern. I think what Diego Simeone's been able to do at Atletico is create this weird, almost like cult-like presence of, if you're here, you are here to work as hard as you possibly can do. And people love him for it. Griezmann's obviously an exception. But that club builds something inside these players. If he leaves, he's going to leave for a club that he cares about and wants to be a part of. And that team happens to be Bayern Munich. Okay, he's had some injury problems, though you can't really count for those anymore. Like, guys like Koeman, guys like Deisler, like, Bayern aren't a club that just get rid of somebody because they've got like a bit of a bad knee. Like, there's somebody, it's a group that really cares about all of the players. I don't think it's anything to really be concerned about. I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do when he is fully fit.
Yeah, and if I could just add to that, I think if Bayern fans are going to be worried about losing a player, it should probably be David Alaba, because we still don't seem like we're any closer to him signing a contract extension. A while back, he did talk about not knowing whether or not his future was certain, and so that's still kind of up in the air. And I think if Bayern are on, or if they're considering selling Alaba, or there's a potential that he doesn't sign a new contract, I don't think selling Lucas Hernandez is anywhere near the realm of possibility for them. And I think you summarized it all quite well, Tim. But since we're on the topic of kind of summer transfer plans, Sebastian Oliver Kahn says that there's no plan in place to loan out Alexander Nubel at the moment. So he did leave it up to potentially change. And then Sven Ulreich also publicly stated that he would leave if an opportunity presented itself, and that if he's wanted, but he could also stay at Bayern if nothing comes up. Schalke have been linked with a move for Ulreich, so Nubel comes to Bayern, Ulreich goes to Schalke. What do you think Bayern should do in this scenario, Sebastian? Should Ulreich be the first one sold if he wants to go? Should they prioritize loaning out Nubel? What would you do?
Mm-hmm. So first, I guess I want to mention real quick that I really liked Kahn's words there, because they strike me as pretty honest, and also it's not something that's going to be turned against you in a month or 2 months' time. So I definitely think that was the right call. by Kahn there. In my opinion, I'm really a big fan of Sven Ulreich, I must say. I think I've mentioned that before. He's probably the goalkeeper I have watched the most in an actual Bundesliga stadium when I lived in Stuttgart when he was their number one. So I really like the guy. And that's why I really think it would be the best thing if we could convince Nübel to go on a loan somewhere. Not sure if how well that's going to work. Probably maybe not in the Bundesliga so easily, because I guess there would be in many clubs at least there would be quite the opposition against that. He would have a bad time convincing the fans that he's a good addition, I believe. So maybe that could be tough there. Ulreich is probably the more reliable backup to Neuer. So that's the one thing. And the other thing is that Nübel, even if Manuel Neuer agrees that he's going to give Nübel some games, it's not going to be as many as he could have somewhere else. So from my perspective, that would be a win-win situation if we can make that work. But that's really a lot of ifs there, because Sven Ulreich is going to want to sign a contract somewhere relatively soon, I believe, because he really doesn't want to be our third guy, which is perfectly understandable. He should be able to start at a lot of places all over the Bundesliga or abroad even. So, yeah. And then we would have to convince Nübel pretty quickly that a loan is in his interest. Because we cannot just keep Ulreich waiting for months and months until that decision has been made. So I don't think it's realistic. Right now, I don't believe it's going to happen. But I would really like if we could get Nübel on a loan and keep Ulreich for another year. While I definitely would also love to see more of Ulreich at another club, really.
Tim, what are your thoughts on this? Because I guess I probably lean more towards the side of, if Sven Ulreich wants to go, we should let him go for, you know, whatever the cost is going to be, because he served the club so well. He stepped up when Manuel Neuer was out and performed, you know, pretty admirably, despite the one incident that was halfway his fault in the Champions League. And that's what I don't want people to remember him for. But what are your thoughts on it, Tim?
Yeah, in terms of backup goalkeepers, he's probably had, I'd say he's had the most to do out of like any backup goalkeeper in any top league in recent memory. I can't really think of anybody else that's had to step up when, you know, the regular number one has been out for so long. I think he is the sort of person that has earned the ability to kind of do what he wants. I think he's always been like a fantastic professional. You know, as you mentioned, there was that mistake against Real Madrid where he caught a lot of flack for that. And as you mentioned, it wasn't entirely his fault. It was a bad pass from Tolisso. But the fact that he stayed at the club and just about every single game from that season a couple of years ago, he was flawless. He was as close to flawless as you can get, considering the drop-off from having, you know, the best goalkeeper in the world to the backup, the guy that was the keeper at Stuttgart. I think the fact that he was able to step up shows just how good he is. And as Sebastian mentioned, he certainly comes across as slightly more reliable than Nübel. And of course, like Alexander Nübel is very young, and like he's inexperienced maybe. But at the same time, if he is, then he's probably best getting those first team minutes at a club that will give them to him, rather than just, you know, how much can you really learn in training and not actually in a match scenario. I would love to see Ulreich stay. I think he has earned that. And then with that, I'd like to see Alexander Nübel go out on loan somewhere. I don't really know where though. And at the same time, I look at somebody like Ulreich as somebody that deserves first team action. I'm kind of surprised that he has stayed for as long as he has, as the number two. Cause I don't think he's played a game since Neuer's injury or since that season. I think he played like one or two times under Kovac. But because he had such a good season where he was so important, like barely missed a step taking that responsibility on, he can be trusted at most clubs. In an ideal world, I'd love to see him become an important fixture somewhere. I guess maybe somewhere like Berlin, as they're kind of going through their rebuild. I don't know who the next manager is going to be. Maybe Kovac. Who knows? Fingers crossed. But he is the sort of person that kind of deserves just about anything that he asks for, really. Ideally he would be number one somewhere. I think he's earned it.
Yeah, I think Berlin's a good fit as well. Rune Jahrstein is not a bad keeper, but you know, I think Ulreich could definitely leap him in the starting lineup. But I mean, if he did go somewhere, he would start at most Bundesliga sides, I would say. And if he left the Bundesliga, went to England, I think it would be the same thing, or you know, France, wherever he might go. Another question that we actually had brought up on Twitter, Sebastian, if the Champions League is going to come back in August, like they're suggesting, Bayern's season will be well over by then because the Bundesliga wraps up in June. The DFB Pokal final will be played within the first week of July. So that'll be a whole month from the, assuming Bayern even make it to the DFB Pokal final, a whole month between the end of Bayern's domestic season and then the Champions League season kicking off. That all being said, Bayern are one of the only teams in the Champions League that's playing at the moment. So this timeline that we're looking at for the Champions League, do you think this is going to end up being more beneficial to Bayern because they're going to have a whole month of games underneath their belt, you know, finishing out the Bundesliga season, or will it end up being detrimental that there's such a big gap between the end of Bayern's season and when the Champions League actually begins again in August?
Yeah, that's really tough to answer because this is really such uncharted territory. I mean, nobody in kind of living history has seen anything like this, really. So really tough to judge, I would say. I guess it is a boring answer, but I guess it's kind of normal. I guess it kind of evens out. Like, it's not really an advantage. It's not really a disadvantage. I guess it is kind of just fair, I suppose. Which, as I said, maybe that's the boring answer, but I guess that really is how I see it. I mean, ideally, you would have this kind of right at the end of your Bundesliga season. That would be perfect. Then it would obviously be a huge advantage. But yeah, it is what it is, and you cannot really change it. I mean, all of those clubs will be in vastly different situations because the whole corona situation has affected countries quite differently, has affected the national leagues kind of pretty differently. So, yeah, what are you going to do? I'm pretty happy that we're kind of likely to see Champions League football this season. And that it's not all over, that we're actually going to finish this tournament. So I guess I'm happy with that, and I'm not going to complain much.
Yeah, I guess a big question will be how it impacts the season after that as well, because it'll be like a Champions League final, and then a week later we're starting the next Champions League season. But I think you're probably right, it's a little bit of both. Bayern are definitely have the advantage over a team like Paris Saint-Germain, who are not going to be playing again at all in Ligue 1, so they're going into the Champions League, you know, without any competition underneath their belt. Tim, would you say it leans in favor for Bayern or leans against Bayern one way or the other? Or do you think it's pretty, kind of like Sebastian said, pretty right down the middle? It's not great, but it's not terrible.
I just quite enjoy that you said, oh yeah, now that the French league's finished, PSG don't have any competition. It wasn't exactly like cut and dry back when they were playing. I think, if anything, we can see that Bayern are mentally a very strong team. I think that's probably going to be what it comes down to. I think it is. It's both good and bad. But I think with guys like, as you mentioned throughout this episode, guys like Müller and Neuer and Kimmich, when you have guys like that that are just desperate to win and perform at their absolute best, it kind of doesn't matter whether they have like a month off or if they have to play the Champions League final tomorrow. I know logistically that just doesn't happen, but it is something that I think the team would certainly be ready for. Compare that to, you know, the way that Chelsea are going to shape up in whenever the next leg is played. it doesn't look very promising for them. And obviously I want Bayern to win the Champions League this season. It is just going to seem a bit weird. Like, whoever lifts the trophy, it's going to just not feel right. Mm-hmm. But I'll happily accept it. If it means that you get like a little six on your sleeve next season, then, you know, that's fine as well. Because obviously you still have to show up and you still have to play the games. But yeah, I think generally, because Bayern are mentally so strong, I think it shouldn't be too much of an issue.
Yeah, and I will add, if they come back to the Champions League with the same sort of form that they came back to the Bundesliga with, then I don't think that they're in any trouble at all, especially because we will, if I'm understanding the format right, we're going to still have one game against Chelsea left under our belt before we advance to the next round. And so our lead over Chelsea already should allow us to use that game as sort of a stepping stone to get back into whatever sort of form that we lose over the extended break. But that's all the time that we have for this one. If you've enjoyed listening, or if you're a regular fan of the pod and you haven't already, please do us a favor and leave us a 5-star review. We would greatly appreciate that. If you want to get in touch with us, there are two ways you can do that. First, you can follow us on Twitter at SuperBayernPod and get in touch with us there. Or you can email us at SuperBayernPod@gmail.com. All of our episodes can be found on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts, we're probably going to be there. Thank you for listening. Go out and tell your friends, and we'll talk to you next time.